Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Ayler's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy!
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back from a long weekend, Memorial Day weekend. I hope everyone had a good time taking an extra day off. But don't forget to salute our servicemen that make our country a great place to be and safe as well. But welcome back from an extended Memorial Day vacation. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Looking forward to talking to Greg Rakestraw when he has the chance to join us, as well as Mike DeCourcy and Dustin DePierrick, as we kind of get caught up from Monday things. But a lot to get caught up from the weekend. The Indianapolis 500 has come and gone. The double for Kyle Larson didn't really work out as well. Also, the Pacers, they lose game three at home. We'll talk about that as the NBA playoffs continue. And on the other side, the Western side, the Timberwolves are down 3-1 to Oklahoma City after last night. So somehow they're a game ahead in this series. But I guess that one catches up tonight as this thing keeps coming at you so fast. It seems like there's a game nonstop. Well, yeah, this is Tuesday. We're so off. We're off because of the holiday weeks, but grateful to have you guys along with us no matter where and where you're from. Drizzly rain down in southern Indiana, apparently, according to Buffalo Bill. Shenanigans along for the ride as well, but no matter where or how you're listening on one of our great affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call down in Evansville, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, the voice of the region, WJOB, and in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380 The Fan. Just keep it locked right here. You've got it in the right place already. And if you're following along on social media, YouTube, etc., make sure you're giving up the like and the subscribe and just hit all that stuff. Follow me on YouTube. I mean, on X, the whole deal. Yeah, just so much. But I hope you had a great weekend. What a beautiful weekend. The weather was pretty nice, at least in our area here in South Central Indiana. And it seemed to be pretty nice around everywhere else. Greg Straw would know as well as anybody. Greg, how are you doing, my friend? As Greg getting ready to join us, can't quite hear him yet, but just speak up when you want to, and we'll certainly be able to hear you. But Greg Straw out at the track all weekend as well, so a busy weekend for him. Heard him doing all kinds of things, and Greg, just start talking when you want to, and we'll hear. I'll let you know when we can hear you, but right now we cannot hear anything you're saying. Tyrone said should read state champion Red Devils country down here in Jeffersonville. I hear you. Hey, Greg, how are you, sir? Thought I heard something, but Greg was busy out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the last month in addition to everything else that he has to do. So it has been a very, very busy time for him as well, as it always is. When is it not a busy time for Greg Stroh? But looking forward to getting hooked up with Greg because, man, the track was just special. You had another win by Alex Palou, and it's like nothing I've ever seen. Let me try to get him added here on this. All right, I've got you added in twice, Greg, and still not able to hear you. But Alex Palou did something that is just amazing. And I still cannot get past what this guy has done. And, well, neither can either of the other drivers in IndyCar as well. As this guy has won six of the first five races. Not only has he won six of the first five races, he's added the Indianapolis 500 to that. And it wasn't like he was leading that race the whole time. It wasn't like that he was dominating this race the whole time. He just won the race. He was there at the end. And, you know, throughout the race, you've got different people up there, different guys leading. Sato looked good. And then all of a sudden, at the end, here comes Alex Palou. And it's, I don't know that I've ever seen anything. I know that IndyCar in 1979, I'll have to look, A.J. Foyt had a great start. A.J. Foyt, I don't remember what he did. And is it ironic that one of the daughters of Jim Irsay is married to a Foyt? By the way, A.J. Foyt, 1979, I think, IndyCar. What did he do? I think he had a great start to the season in that year. But we'll have to wait and find out. I'll wait to hopefully get Greg on here. I know he's having trouble connecting, and he'll continue to try to get on with us. But what an outstanding weekend, except for the fact that the Pacers lost at home for game three of the NBA Eastern Conference Finals playoffs. They just didn't seem to, they never were, I don't want to say in sync, but no one got on a run. No one, as a player, no one seemed to get loose. It was just they're waiting for someone to really start, and it just never happened for the Pacers. It was a lower scoring game. I know that when the Pacers score 120 points, they're virtually unbeatable. They did not. I kept watching the score, and the score was lower, and I'm like, New York has this down where they want it. They're keeping this game manageable. They weren't letting the Pacers get off offensively and get away from them. And that was the key to the game. And so New York was able to do what they do and keep the game, the score to a manageable level and stay in front. Now you've got game four back at Gainbridge Fieldhouse tonight. We'll see what they can get done. Hopefully more. We'll try to get Greg on later on this in the broadcast. We'll send him a text and see if he can join us later. Not sure what to, just a technical problem. As always, technical issues can happen, but that's not a big deal. Long live the Hulk. Well, Roswell says in 1979, A.J. Foyt won the IndyCar Championship and the USAC Stock Car Championship. That's pretty damn good. That's back in the day when guys were running both. There were guys that were running both. The Allisons, not everybody, but Dusty Banner says Newgarden was running through the field like a bad case of food poisoning until fuel pressure issues. He started in the back and made it up until the top 10. I can't remember how far up he got, but Tyree says Papa Halliburton will be in the building tonight. Oh, they let him back in. Sir Charles, I heard him asking for him to let him back in. So Five Left said it was smart for New York to bring Towns off the bench. Indy Jarhead says Mario won Indy, Daytona, and an F1 championship. Yeah, Mario Andretti, of course, one of the greats all time. That's back, man, back in the day. Those guys drove everything all the time. And it's kind of like Kyle Larson, except for they were crossing series. So, but we'll talk more about that and much later. Kyle Larson, see, Robert says Kyle Larson seemed disinterested and appeared to treat this run of the 500 as an obligation. Kudos for giving him for giving it a shot. Doubt we see him or any other NASCAR driver try it after this. I don't think he was disinterested. I mean, it's kind of hard to be disinterested when you're in a car going 230 miles an hour. But he just did not have the run. It was not going. This entire attempt was not going well for him. I agree in that regard. As it just never practiced. Nothing ever seemed to spark. But, hey, we've got to take a quick break. We'll talk more Indy later. Mike DeCourcy will join us next. We'll try to get Greg on with us here later in the broadcast. Appreciate you being with us on this post-holiday Tuesday. We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this post-holiday Tuesday. I hope you had a good weekend. Nice. Yesterday was just absolutely beautiful here. I didn't do anything, but I looked at it and felt it and felt the breeze running through. So hope everyone enjoyed it and enjoyed your weekend. No matter what you were doing, where you were going, no matter what's happening. How was your weekend? What did you do? Did you just take in, there was so much going on, like I've talked about and will continue to be going on as the Pacers, they're back at it tonight, man. After, a bad day, it was a bad day at the office. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News joining us now. Mike, how was your holiday weekend, sir?
It was good, Jim. How are you?
I cannot complain. If I couldn't be any better. If I was any better, I'd be Mike DeCourcy.
Oh.
But it was a good weekend. I relaxed. I actually went to Pacers game 3. I did not try to do the double. I thought about doing the double, but I was like, you know what? I know what traffic is like leaving the Indianapolis 500. And I'm talking 2 hours after staying in the media area for 2 hours. I remember the first time thinking, all right, I'm good now. Oh, no. Oh, no, you're not. If you don't know, you don't know what, and I'm not talking to Mike, I'm talking in general. You don't know what trying to leave a facility that had 350,000 people at it. you cannot really fathom 350,000 real humans, singular humans being in one spot. I know you have, Mike, you don't know what I'm saying, but it's crazy. And the fact that they sold this thing out and there was nothing, it was special. I mean, you had Joseph Newgarden going for 3 in a row, which had never been done. Alex Palou, Kyle Larson. So there were some storylines. But other than that, it was another Indianapolis 500. But it seems like that since Roger Penske took over, there has been just a little added something to this race because it has been packed ever since he's had it.
Well, I think there are a few factors that go into that, Jim. Let's not forget how much the series was damaged, or the whole concept of IndyCar racing was damaged years ago with the split between CART and the Indy group. I think we're at the point now where that has been repaired. I think that's a part of it. I think Newgarden's appeal is extraordinary. A great figure to build racing around. He's very appealing. He's obviously very good looking. He has a great personality. Good, you know, very humble guy. He's very easy to like, and so you have that. Then you have Palau's brilliance, not just on Sunday but through the course of the series, and I think that all of that has really helped IndyCar reemerge as a force in the media. And I think that selling that out was really great, because if you saw the numbers yesterday, the television numbers for Sunday's race, they had their best audience in a decade or more. And it's clear that having Indy as a part of the audience, which has not been the case for a lot of the last, I lived in Indy for 10 years, Jim. I was on television twice, once because of the 100th anniversary, and once because of the pandemic, and almost nobody could be in the stands. So those are the only two times in my decade there that I could watch the race on television. And now you get those numbers added in, the Indy audience, which is such a committed audience to this race. I think that showed that it can be good for the Indy race, for the 500 people, and for now Fox, to have that blackout gone. That's an element of the Indy 500 that has seen better days. There are lots of things that they don't do at the Indy 500 anymore. Various things they do, you have full body suits, fireproof and all that. And you saw how much value that had on Sunday. There's a lot of things that have changed at Indy over the years, but that blackout's still there. It was great to see it lifted. It was great to see a sellout crowd and a phenomenal race. I mean, those last dozen laps, with Erickson trying to overtake Palau, but Palau just not having any of it and riding the lap traffic to conserve his fuel. It was a phenomenal race. It's maybe not the best ever, but it was terrific.
It was a good race. And the funny thing is, Palau had nothing to do with the race until he did. it was different guys leading, different, and he wasn't really in that lead pack, so to say. He wasn't a name to look at. I mean, everyone's looking at, where's this guy? Where's Newgarden? He's moving up. Where's Larson? Who's lead? And Palau was just kind of biding his time, and then all of a sudden, he does what Palau does, leads the damn race. I think he's won six of the first seven races of this season. I don't know how that's possible in this day and age of any sport to dominate like that. I mean, you just don't see that kind of dominance at this level in anything. I don't care if we're talking auto racing or boxing or whatever. That is dominance, man.
Well, and it's interesting because in the sport of racing, where so many things can go wrong.
Yeah.
And for you to be able to be that consistently successful, you could have some part on the car snap off, and all of a sudden there goes your race. And we saw it happen, what, almost a dozen times. You can have some part
of somebody else's car. Somebody else's car go wrong.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Something could happen, and someone can make the wrong move, or they could, as you mentioned, they could have a mechanical thing that just takes them out of their ordinary course, and they take you out, and all of a sudden you've had bad luck. They just have not had that at all. It's terrific for Chip Ganassi's team. I haven't talked to Chip in a very long time, but I knew him well decades ago when I covered auto racing for the Pittsburgh Press, and he's a Pittsburgh guy.
Oh, is he? Yeah, oh, yeah. I did not know that.
Very interesting. Chip was an auto racing driver who ran the circuit and raced in the 500. And he came from a very successful family. And he had a very bad accident. I think it was a track down in Florida. And my paper sent me over to his home to interview him. And I interviewed him, and his family was around. And his father walked me out, and it made it very obvious that he didn't want Chip to run anymore. After that accident, he'd like, look, you know, he basically pointed to the house and said, you know, he doesn't need to be doing this racing thing, in so many words. And Chip stuck with the driving and ran in the 500 the following year. And that was the one race I got to cover for the press. Gradually from there, not long after, sort of coming back to show he could run. Yeah, I'm, you know, you're not chasing me out of this just because I had a bad accident. And after he did that, I think it said something to himself like, okay, I've proven that. Now, how can I use what I know, my business acumen, which he was a business graduate of Duquesne University, and my driving skill, my knowledge of the racetrack, to build a successful business. And he's done phenomenally well. And so very happy for him. Really, really a good guy.
And a guy that you wouldn't want to mess with. He's not just anybody. I mean, he looks like he just can walk into a bar, sit down, and order a big old mug of beer. I mean, he's just a burly kind of looking guy, but uber successful because he doesn't just run in the Indy series. He's got cars that run in NASCAR, and there's not a lot of guys that do that crossover because it's hard. It's two completely different disciplines.
Right.
It's like running two completely different. It is two completely different businesses because while they're similar, they're very, very different. But he has success on both sides of the coin.
Absolutely. Even with all the success he's had as a team owner, I don't think he's ever had a run like he's got with Palau right now.
Oh, and the 500. Well, who has?
I don't know. Has? At some point, I got to think Al Unser or A.J. Foyt or Rick Mee or somebody like
A.J. Foyt. A.J. Foyt apparently had a great run in 79. I was trying to look it up. I know he won the title, but someone pointed out some things that he actually did too, as well, though. That was back when they, you know, these guys were running both series at the same time. Roswell said in 79, A.J. Foyt won the IndyCar Championship and the USAC Stock Car Championship.
Wow.
Now that's getting something done. but a different time, no doubt. Hey, we've got the great Mike DeCourcy with us from the Sporting News, Fox, and Big Ten Networks. We're going to take a quick pause. Back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Tuesday, post a holiday Tuesday. Glad to have you with us. I have Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, Fox, and Big Ten Networks along for the ride as well. And Mike, I would be remiss if I did not mention, because we have not spoken with it, but the passing of Jim Irsay. And because he meant so much to the city of Indianapolis, he loved Indianapolis. And he loved impacting the community. It wasn't just about owning a football team with him, which he loved a lot. You could tell he was a hands-on owner from the standpoint of he really loved to be on a first name talking basis with his players. It's just a little different than some owners. And you could tell it. Well, he had his issues that he fought to get past. But man, you talk about someone that's involved with that was really, really entrenched in the community. That was Jim Irsay.
Yeah, such a charitable person. Both the obvious stuff, the stuff that the foundation and the concert he used to do for charity and the mission to. How do they put it? Erase the stigma. all of that. A very important figure in Indianapolis during my time there, obviously. And I think it's a shame that he had those demons, because if left unfettered, I imagine how much more he could have accomplished with all he did, if he didn't have to fight that battle on the other front and had the energy to devote it all to the wonderful things that he did do. He could have done even more. It's a real shame to lose him at that age. I mean, it's basically my age, Jim. And so when someone passes, you get to this age and you see someone pass at that age, it's, you know, it really hits you. And I'm very, very sad for the Irsay family. I know he had a beautiful family that he leaves behind. And it's a real shame to lose him at what I consider to be a fairly young age.
Right. And the stigma of mental illness conditions are something that he championed and will continue to champion after he's gone now, because he has started this. But just standing up for things that most of the time owners of sports teams are not really involved with.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the things that made Jim special. He was certainly among sports owners, the word unique gets overused, Jim. People don't always understand exactly what it means. It means there's only one. Like, there's nobody else like that, or there's nothing else like that. There's no gradation of unique. You hear it all the time. It's a very there is no very to unique. It's just one. And that's Jim. There was no other sports owner like him, with his love for music, his love for the community. I mean, we obviously have other owners that love their communities and contribute to their communities, but he chose in kicking the stigma, as one of our listeners pointed out, he chose a charitable cause that was not your standard issue, was not something that a lot of wealthy individuals would get involved in as publicly as he did. So I have great respect for what he did in that area. It very close to home for me as well. And I can't send enough condolences to the Irsay family and the people who love Jim.
And the word unique is perfect, because we've got all of that we just talked about, which is completely unique in and of itself, and you could stop right there. But then you had all of the fun things that he did for the fans, that the show that he would put on, the band, his own band that he had, that he played in publicly, would bring these stars in. You don't see that. I mean, it was just wild. He was so unique that I'm not going to say there'll never be another owner like him, because as things go on and younger people might get involved, you could always see that possibly, but I don't know. He was, he endured what he endured, and that's why he championed a cause, and he had just unique talents, and he grew up in a different time, a time that people will never experience again. So it's I don't know that we'll see another individual quite like him again.
Absolutely. He grew up in my time in a much different way. Obviously, the son of a wealthy NFL team owner. We didn't grow up the same way, but we grew up at the same time with the same influences in terms of music and culture and that sort of thing. I don't know if he was into disco. I had my moment in the 70s when I did some of that. I think he was more of a rock and roller. I can never dance, but I did try. But I think he was more of a rock and roller during his time in his teens.
Yeah, fun time. And just the change. Now, I know he didn't bring the Colts to Indianapolis, But the Colts' arrival in 1984 in Indianapolis, no matter, albeit however it happened in the middle of the night with the Mayflower trucks coming in, who will ever forget that? I mean, that's one of the greatest things of all time. I laugh as I'm thinking about these Mayflower trucks rolling in at 2 a.m. or something, sneaking into the city, bringing a professional football team in. But the change that the Colts have made to Indianapolis, the way that not only the city, but the state has adopted that team, winning sure helped. I mean, if you didn't have that winning run with Peyton Manning, I don't know how great it would be, but they did. And so the Colts, they're loved. The Pacers, they're loved. Indiana loves their sports teams, man. Professional, college, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and Jim, I'll tell you, I don't know. I don't know exactly where it comes from, but I will tell you that in a decade of living there, I think the Steelers played at Lucas Oil at least four, probably five times during our time there. And we and Deb and I attended every game. And so I this is not a one-time experience kind of thing. I've been a lot of NFL stadiums wearing a little Steeler emblem on, and I have never, ever been treated as graciously as they do in Indianapolis. And it's not, and I don't think it's because like everybody knew that it was Mike DeCourcy. I don't think that's what it was. I just think that because I've read it from others said the exact same thing. Indy football fans are the most gracious in all of the sport. And I don't know how much of that comes from the ownership culture, the culture of the Colts. I imagine some of it does. But it has to,
because if you think about basketball with Purdue and Indiana, those fans, that's not the same. It's not, two things are not the same here.
<that's> Oh, I don't know. I've been to a lot of both, and it may be a little rough on the message boards and on talk shows, but they're pretty good in the building too. I've not seen great hostility. Obviously they support their teams unbelievably well in both venues, but I've not seen a lot of hostility there either. Although I can say that I didn't go into either of those buildings as a follower of the opposing team.
Yeah, it's funny, but as far as the pro teams, yeah, it's amazing. And speaking of the devil, the Pacers now, boy. Not surprised that they lost that game three, but you had New York by the throat.
Yeah.
If you win that game, it's over. Yeah. And now you give them a little life.
Yes.
And tonight's game is of uber importance because you above all else cannot, not only can you not allow them to tie the series, you can't allow them to tie the series in your own home because now you've given back up the home court advantage, which you worked so hard to get.
Right. Yeah. All that's true. It becomes just basically, I mean, it's not if you lose that you can't win the series, but it gives up so much if you do. They had the 20-point lead, and I will say that I was disappointed in how they attacked the initial lineup that New York put out there. I thought Siakam had the opportunity to attack his matchup over and over and over again and almost never did. And it was so puzzling because he was so brilliant on Friday night. And then Sunday seemed not to want to be that player again and was more interested in fadeaways and followaways. And when he goes to the rim, I don't think that they had the ability to stay in front of him with the two bigs, whether it was Towns or Robinson. I think he beats either one of those guys off the dribble whenever he wants. And he never did it. So they missed the opportunity early there to dictate the pace. They had the 20-point lead. And I thought they fought through a pretty good third quarter after giving up 7 points of the 20-point lead before halftime. I thought they were in pretty good shape with about 4 or 5 minutes left in the third quarter and let that get away in those final few minutes of the third quarter. That was disappointing. I thought Benedict Mathurin has got to be smarter. When you're getting put in the game like that, you can't commit screening fouls, for goodness sakes. I mean, you just can't. You're a pro now. You can't multiple screening fouls. You shouldn't. You know, one of the things that I never quite understand, Jim, is why it's not better taught that if you set a screen, you don't have to hit the guy for it to work. All you have to do is make the guy go take a wider path than he wants to, because your offensive player is going directly to where he wants to go. And if you can make the defender take a wider path, then he'll get there late. And your guy can either drive the ball or shoot the ball, whatever he might want to do, or pass it or whatever. Too often guys are so intent on making sure they make contact that they end up setting the screen illegally. And I think that's a mistake that it amazes me that I see it as much as I do at the pro level. Sometimes I think it's on purpose because they want to get a little contact in there in lesser games. But in a playoff game, I don't think there's many occasions where you can afford to take a screening foul, because it takes the ball out of your hands.
Especially, like you said, you just basically have to get in the way.
Yeah.
You have to just intercept his path to just cause that momentary pause of defensive coverage, because maybe the shot is coming right off of the screen, or it just takes that split second to get around and to go toward the back, whatever the case is. But yeah, I agree with you. Screen fouls are dumb. Just stand still, man. If they go around you, they go around you, because the moment you start to move, lean, stick a shoulder out, that's a foul, and they're going to call it.
Absolutely, because it's one of the things that they want to call for multiple reasons. One, it's so obvious. It's right out in the open. So it's hard to get away with it. And the other is that it can be physically punishing, and so they want to keep that down because they don't want guys getting hurt because somebody stuck out a hip and you hit them in the wrong spot. I think that's all true. Cheryl Sizemore mentions it's going to be tough without Neesmith. I had not seen the last report I saw was game time decision. Is that not still the case, Jim?
I have not seen anything different on that yet either. I did not know that they had changed that, but it would be. But we'll see if he does make it, because I didn't even see what happened to him.
Yeah, he stepped on, I believe it was Brunson's foot. And that was another significant element of why they gave up the lead. Things went really south after Aaron got hurt. They had been going, as I said, reasonably well. It was 13 at the half. It was around 13 to 15 for most of the early part of the third quarter. And then when he got hurt, I mentioned Mathurin came in, played really poorly. And they had to rush Shepard into the rotation. Shepard's playing very well in these playoffs, but you want to keep him in his spot in the rotation. And they had to bring him in early, and it threw the rhythm of the final few minutes of that quarter off. And in the end, it just didn't work. She's right. They absolutely need Aaron to be successful. They can get by, but he's such an important player because it makes them weaker defensively against Brunson. It takes an asset out of their offense. Shepard has been fine. Mathurin's a fantastic offensive player if he's focused, but he diminishes the defense, and that's why he's lost a lot of his minutes. He has not been good defensively in these playoffs, and so his significant skill offensively kind of gets muted because they can't always afford to have him out there.
Yeah, he's listed as questionable, the latest that I see from CBS Sports, and that's, I would doubt that they, when you have an injury like that, he played on it after he did it, which didn't probably help it, because you can get by with it at that moment, and then then the pain sets in, the swelling sets in,
right?
And with these playoffs happening so fast, If this had been the previous series where you had 3 days between, that would have made a huge difference. But now they're every other day.
Yeah.
And whoo, it's a lot harder to recover from these injuries to be able to come back and to be impactful, especially for someone like him. And he is very, very important to this Pacers offense.
Yeah, I think that the reasoning they went with was if they could just if he could get through it and help them, then they could rest him for this one. If they got the 3-0, they could rest him for this one and then move on. And it almost worked, Jim. And it might have worked if it weren't for really. I mean, that was the worst officiated game of the Pacers playoff series. All of them, Bucks, Cavs, early Knicks. That was the worst officiated game they've played so far. And the officiating system, you're only allowed two challenges, even if you're successful on both. I'm not sure that I like that. I think if they keep getting them wrong, you should be allowed to keep getting them right. And Siakam's block of Ananobi's dunk attempt was as clean as it could be. And it would have easily been reversed had they been able to challenge it. And they weren't wrong to challenge prior because it was a turnover that they ended up getting as a result of the missed pass, and then the Pacers scored. So they didn't waste the opportunity they had gained by the second challenge, and then they just didn't have a third challenge to take that awful call off the board, and it winds up Ananobi makes two free throws, and instead of the Pacers having the ball and a chance to take the lead, they're still chasing the game. The officials that worked that game, I hope the Pacers don't see them. I hope the Pacers don't see that crew again. It was the worst officiated game that I've seen and I've watched every Pacers game except I think it was I saw only the end of game two of the Cavs series.
So they rotate officials during the playoffs?
Yes. They don't use the same crew game after game. They have, I think I saw one of the crews that I really liked on last night's Timberwolves OKC game. I saw one of them, one of those crews from an earlier Pacers game. I saw them working that game last night, and I was like, bring those guys back to Indy. They're pros. They get them right.
Can either one of these Eastern Conference teams beat Oklahoma City?
They'll have to play very well. Oklahoma City has so many difficult guys to match up against it. Every time SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, takes over a game, and then you think, okay, we got to throw everything we can at him. Then you see someone like they have so many different guys that can hurt you. They just have a lot of weapons that come at you, and I think it's going to be a challenge, but I think both of them have a chance. I think both of them are better constructed teams than Minnesota is, Minneapolis is. I think that's a really nice team, and Edwards is phenomenal. But I think that both of the teams in the East are better, but at least better constructed to try to take your chance on beating what is a really varied and talented Oklahoma City team.
Well, we'll certainly hope that Indiana can get past that, because if they lose tonight, that just puts them in a very, very precarious position. Not that they haven't gone to New York, but there's a difference between going there, winning two, and then losing two at home and going back to New York,
right?
Because you will have given them all the confidence in the world.
Yeah, and it's just that it's such a vast difference now between 3-1 and 2-2. A lot of people predicted before this series began that it would go seven. And I totally understand why that's the case. The Knicks are not an easy team to get rid of. They've got two of the best offensive players in the league between Towns and Brunson. They're just both outstanding. And especially when Towns is hitting like he did the other night, they really are hard to deal with. But the Pacers have to be more insistent about running their offense. And that was the mistake they made Sunday night, is that even when they were building the 20-point lead, a lot of that was they had good rhythm in that stretch. But for most of the game, they were not they did not move the ball well. They did not drive it with great aggression. Again, as I said before, a lot of it went through Siakam, and I just don't understand how a guy goes for 39 one night and then the next night just doesn't seem to want to attack. It just was really odd, but it made a big difference in that game. If the Knicks come back with the two bigs again and you don't attack that off the bounce, you deserve to lose. You have to, because it's the one advantage you have. Because they can't stay in front of Siakam. There's no way whichever one takes him, neither can stay in front of him on a consistent basis. And then where do you go from there? Do you always take it to the rim? Well, maybe not, but make sure that you have guys in the opposite corner that can be there, like whether it's Nesmith if he's healthy, or Nembhard or whatever. There's a lot of different things that you can do, or he can wrap it back around out to Halliburton, or somebody can be cutting and he can drop it and they can lay it in. But you have to use that ball handling skill advantage that Siakam has over the big man lineup for New York. They did not punish that enough. I'm sure they've watched a ton of film in the 2 days since, and I'd be shocked if they let that, if indeed New York comes back with that they let that hang there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the Pacers do tonight at home. They have an opportunity to really put themselves in a great position or a really bad position, depending upon what they do with this game. And it's going to take somebody stepping up. Somebody else is going to have to step up, and whether that's Siakam or Tyrese Halliburton or whomever it is, but someone is going to have to step up big, because Aaron Nesmith has been, I don't want to say the heart and soul of this team, but he has certainly been the lungs, the liver, and a few other things in a few games. He has just been an unsung hero, hitting those five straight threes in one game. I mean, just, man, he has been a guy that is that you have to have on your team to win a championship. And if a team wants to win a championship, boy, you've got to be able to do the things. You have to be able to overcome the opportunities that they are getting presented tonight with potentially an injured star and a home playoff game.
If he's not able to go, then Mathurin has to be great. Mathurin's not going to bring to you defensively what Nesmith does. He's not ready to do that yet as an NBA player. But he can be a terrific offensive player. Nesmith is a very capable offensive player who adds in spurts success and who is always a threat. But Mathurin he can be a punishing offensive player. He can be one of those guys that people are talking about tomorrow. Where'd that come from? Well, he's got the whole bag. I mean, he is a really gifted offensive player. But he's got to have his confidence back, and he's at least got to guard at a passable level so that they can leave him out there and keep going to him on offense if he can get it rolling. I think he can make a huge difference tonight. I'm not promising that. And frankly, I hope that Nesmith is able to go and be great, and that you don't ever need to go to page two.
What is up next for you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm working on a column about U.S. soccer, which has an interesting summer coming up, and the Christian Pulisic, the team star, is deciding to take the summer off from the international game and getting a lot of heat about that, and I have some views on that, so that'll be up later today, early tomorrow, and I'm continuing to follow the NBA playoffs, and maybe we'll dip my toe into those waters too, depending on how things go.
Well, we'll certainly see how they do. Make sure you're giving Mike a follow and keeping up with this content at the Sporting News. Appreciate you, my friend, as always.
Thank you, Jim. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure. Look forward to seeing you again next week. We've got more coming up. Dustin DePerrick will join us here on the program, as well as Greg Rakestraw a little bit later on. We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this post-holiday Tuesday. Glad to have you along for the ride. Indianapolis 500 weekend, NBA playoffs weekend, and Dustin Napierik from the Indy Star joining us now. Dustin, I must be bad luck. I was in the building for game three, and I won't be back for game four, so I'm not going to worry about that. But, man, they got him a lead, and just no one ever seemed to step up after that.
Yeah, no, it faded really fast. I mean, they just, you know, obviously talked to them about it after, and they just felt like just everything got stagnant. I mean, obviously the entire basis of their offense is randomized movement and just keeping the ball moving and bringing, you know, pressure and speed into the game and pushing the pace. And they didn't, they just didn't get moving. And Bill Evans right here made this really key point. They had two fast break points in the second half. 14 in the first half, but just didn't really get going at all. And that was kind of a key piece. Tyrese Halliburton was saying right after, he was just like, yeah, I know I'm going to watch the film and see opportunities to push the pace that I didn't take. It felt like he was walking the ball up the floor. And I don't know how much of that, I asked him, why was that? Like, you are a person who wants to push pace. Obviously you just decide not to run. What changed? And, he was just talking about getting people organized and felt like he didn't do that fast enough to make sure everybody was kind of in line. And I do think, part of it, I think, was just feeling like, okay, well, you're up 20, try to hold a lead. Don't necessarily, I think there's a, it's a natural inclination, but also with some of it's like, it's just strategies. Like, okay, you have this, keep it. Like, don't run yourself into turnovers. Don't run yourself into problems. But they're like, they kind of have to remind themselves like, okay, this is what they do, so it's better for them to attack and take risks than it is for them to kind of sit back on their heels. And so they have to step it up. Maxine's already got stuff to say, as you can tell this morning. So I think I do think Aaron Nesmith getting hurt, like obviously he came back and played the fourth quarter. I don't know what his situation is going to be today. He's going to be a game time decision, but I thought that shook them up a little bit. They didn't necessarily buy into that, but it seemed to me that playing without him for a little bit was a bit of a problem, just because I think when you see a player go down, even when it gets back, you just have that moment like, oh no, I think that that can shake a team up. Obviously, Maxine's got to go outside, so I'm going to pick this up and move it.
It does, and it hurts. I mean, because they cannot do what they normally do. And you talk about the Pacers not attacking more in the second half. That's probably a big part of it, is you don't have a guy who can do that, especially off of that bum ankle. But there are other peoples. I had Mike DeCourcy on with us just before you, and he was surprised that Pascal Siakam did not take advantage to attack when, especially when the big man was not in the game. They brought him, Carl Anthony Towns, brought him off the bench, especially after he was coming off of a 39-point performance.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy for Pascal. I think the thing I wrote about after he had 39 is like he's getting defended by, some of the best guys in the league. I mean,
he's
guarded by OG. And this is after he was guarded by Giannis in the first round and Mobley in the second round. He's a guy obviously that they're targeting. It's in the same way that they're targeting Tyrese and trying to make sure that he's being defended by a top level guy. Siakam's being defended by top level guys, and he just happens to play teams that have great defenders that handle power forwards. So that part's not easy. I mean, Siakam did, have some of the most important buckets in the game in the fourth quarter in terms of just keeping them in it at all. I mean, he came through with some big shots. Basically the way they operate is they rarely decide, well, this guy's got to get the ball. They every once in a while they do. They did in game two. They obviously, kind of targeted Pascal, felt like. That's where their offense had to go through. This one was different. A few things also changed that the Knicks did. I mean, they went with Mitchell Robinson in the starting lineup, moved Josh Hart onto the bench, and brought and actually played a bench for once. Tibbs doesn't usually do that, and a bunch of guys got in foul trouble, but he had to play Landry Shamet, had to play DeLon Wright, and those guys had 34 minutes between them in the entire playoffs before Sunday night. And I thought those guys were really good. I mean, it allows you to step up on defense. Brunson is the one guy that the Pacers can really target on offense. It's one of those series where, you know, your best offensive player is your defensive weak point. And they had been, you know, kind of hunting Brunson out, and basically, you know, those two guys allowed them to sit Brunson for a while when he got into foul trouble. And it made it hard to find somebody to pick on, basically. And there wasn't really a clear option there, and they just didn't have the sharp enough ball movement. But yeah, I'm trying to think of who was on Siakam, but, you know, I mean, he had some big shots, but he doesn't. He also feels like he's not supposed to take over, that no one's supposed to take over. That's how this offense is supposed to work, is it just finds energy and it finds the open guy. It's not supposed to be about, okay, well, make sure this guy gets the ball, or make sure that guy gets the ball, or this guy has to take over. You know, I mean, their view is no one's supposed to take over. You know, like, if someone's taking over, that means something didn't work.
Yeah, and if things don't go well tonight, the Pacers will have to look back and to the period where they had a 2-0 lead and a 20-point lead in the game. And boy, that's going to hurt. But that's if things don't come together tonight. The importance of tonight's game is, I don't even know how the words to use to put on it, because I said earlier with Mike, you cannot win the first two games on the road and then give up two games at home with two more games to play in New York.
Sure. Yeah, no, you don't want to do that. I mean, worth noting, big piece, they're 0-3 now in game threes, but they're 2-0 in game fours. So they've done this both series. You know, I mean, obviously the last time, you know, they also came back home. Cleveland stomped them in game three at home, basically after the Pacers had already taken them down twice in Cleveland. And so came to Indianapolis in game three. Pacers lost that, lost it bad, turned it around and whooped Cleveland in game four. Just stomped all over them. And basically, you know, it's different scenarios as far as like what changed. Cavs did really good work with that 3-2 zone in game three, and Pacers had 2 days to pick it apart. And when they picked it apart, they really picked it apart. And that's actually, you know, one of Siakam's first, you know, one of his other better games. They just did a really good job of picking on the back line of that 3-2. So generally you give Rick Carlisle 2 days to fix a problem, and he's really good at fixing a problem. And not only him, but this whole team, Tyrese Halliburton, everybody, and their whole staff. I mean, they've got for as much as obviously Carlisle gets a lot of credit, he's got a really good staff. Mike Weiner, Jenny Busek, Jim Boylan, Gennaro Pargo, Mike, you know, Lloyd Pierce, obviously, those guys are sharp guys. Those folks, obviously, it's not just guys, are sharp people. And they generally are good at figuring out what went wrong and what they can attack going forward. And so they're going to expect to see more depth from the Knicks. They're going to expect to see a different group. And they're going to know, obviously, that the wear down effect is going to be a little bit different if the Knicks are going to actually use a rotation that goes beyond, you know, seven guys, and they don't live with their starters as long as they tend to do. So they can, you know, they know how to adjust in the course of a series, and they've done it well so far. So, I mean, like, yes, obviously this game is mission critical. I mean, you don't want to take home court advantage back and then lose it. You know, that's not optimal at all, but they know that, you know, and again, they've done it every, you know, each of the first two series. You know, obviously they were at home for games one and two in the first round. You know, and so when you go back to their place and lose game three, and that's a lot less worrisome than it is when you win two on the road and lose at home. But still, you know, I think they have rallied after, you know, game three losses. That, you know, those are their only two losses. I mean, they've lost three games in these playoffs, and they've all been game threes. And so after taking a 2-0 lead, so this is a spot they're exactly used to through the first two rounds of the playoffs. They know what the stakes are. They're fully aware. And so, you know, I don't expect to see, you know, that kind of lackluster performance in game four. Now, it, just as you had to be worried about in the last round with the Cavs, you're like, okay, well, you woke this team up. You know, this team figured out something to do, and you know, it has options now. And certainly the Cavs have were playing without a bunch of guys in game two. They all came back for game three, and you're like, okay, well, now they're fully rested. They've got their dudes, and they're going to be a problem. You know, they could it's similar issue. Obviously, there's no injuries involved, but it's, you know, they've figured out an answer. They figured out, hey, if you play the Pacers, you have to play some guys because you're going to get worn down. And sort of having an answer there makes a difference. But on the flip side, I'm sure the Pacers are going to find some things, one, that they did wrong, two, that they can attack. And you're going to see them obviously be pretty motivated for having dropped a game they weren't supposed to, that they didn't feel like they were supposed to drop. So, you know, it's how these course of these series go. I mean, you don't freak out until they lose game four. I think the, if you're the Pacers, the worst thing that you can do is start thinking like, oh my God, what if we blow game four? What are we going to do? You don't want to have to go back and win a third game at the Garden, you know, like if you put yourself in a position where you have to win at least one at the Garden. You don't want to, obviously. I mean, that would go really poorly. But if you're them, I don't know if it would go poorly. Obviously, you know, so far no one's won a home game in this series. So, you know, maybe they'd be better off playing in the Garden. But bottom line is, you know, like obviously you have to win this thing, but if you're them, you feel pretty good about what happens when you look bad in game three, because in every case you've been a lot get better in game four.
Yeah, you get the win tonight. You go up 3-1 with three games left to win one game, which is including one more at home, which should set up well for the Pacers. It would definitely be to their advantage. But they have to get by tonight without Aaron Nesmith, who has been a very, very important part of this team. Well, you're right. I can't. But it won't be with Aaron Nesmith at his best, no matter
what. Yeah, I Miles Turner joked that Aaron Nesmith is made of vibranium.
And him at 80% maybe, or 75% maybe better than a lot of guys at 100%.
Sure. No, I mean, he's going to play with force. He's going to play with like just ferocity like he does. And so, you know, you don't know what percent he's going to be, obviously. And so, but at the same way, I mean, like it's, you know, we've seen people play through ankles before. You know, Brunson's been playing through an ankle the entire playoffs. You know, like he keeps, you know, the joke was like, what happens to Jalen Brunson when he keeps going into the locker room and he just, you know, comes out of there and his ankle's fine basically every time he hits the thing. So, you know, like we'll see how it goes. I mean, and like, obviously, again, Nesmith's a tough guy. I mean, the fact that Nesmith even was like, oh no, well I'm playing, you know, like he was just jumping up and down on the sideline, you know, just being like somebody put me in, like I'm good, I'm golden. And like, obviously he woke up yesterday morning and as you would expect, if someone plays on a bum ankle for 7 minutes, it was swollen, you know, or I mean, I presume it was swollen. He said it was, you know, Rick Carlisle said it was sore and it tends to be swollen up. But you know, he'll have,
you take that shoe off, baby.
Yeah, it's not fun. But I mean, he's had a good 36 hours to work on it, to not work on it, to do whatever the training staff has kind of asked him to do with it. He'll have 36 hours by game time. So you'll see, you know, we'll find out when we get to pregame, basically where, you know, how he's done the rest of the day. And then what that's been like for him. And so, you know, like, would I be shocked to see Aaron Nesmith play and play well? No. Because one, he's tough, and like he is made from some pretty good stuff. Like I said, Miles Turner joked that he's made out of vibranium and he just heals. You know, like there was that one, you know, kind of chase down block he had in the Milwaukee series where he just landed flat on his back and that didn't look fun at all. And he was good, you know. I mean, but on flip side of it, he had another ankle this year that cost him 35 games. So, you know, like things can go different ways, but I mean, obviously presumptively it's not nearly that bad. You know, I don't know what it was that made this, that ankle injury as bad as it was. But he's, you know, I mean, like if he can do it, he's going to do it, you know, like if he can do it, he's going to play. I mean, I guess the tough part, I will say this, what stood out in, at the end of game three, there was one play where he was guarding Brunson and Brunson kind of got downhill on him. And I was just like, I wonder if he was healthy, if he didn't just jam that ankle up, if he gets in front there, you know, if he cuts that drive off. And so I don't know, you know, and obviously we'll see later, but I mean, like, there are going to be things he's going to be able to do, even if he's not 100%, that are of value. You know, he's going to bring, you know, he's going to play defense. He's going to rebound. He's going to shoot, you know, he can shoot the ball really well. He's shot the ball just phenomenally in this series. Obviously phenomenal in this series. He had 6 threes and a quarter. But you know, I think, he, you know, we'll see with him. You don't want to rule Aaron Nesmith out until, you know, he's on that inactive list. And you're not going to find that out until half an hour before tip off. So, I mean, I would just say, like, do not rule Aaron Nesmith out. You know, the last thing you should ever do is rule Aaron Nesmith out.
That aside, who has to step up? Is it Tyrese Halliburton? Is it Pascal Siakam?
It's somebody everybody, Jim. It's everybody. Yeah. Simple. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's always the cheesy, obvious answer. But no, I mean, put it in different places. Obviously, you need a little bit more from your stars. In that case, you need a little bit more Tyrese Halliburton. You need a little bit more Pascal Siakam. You need a little bit more Miles Turner. But in terms of, like, okay, well, who has to take on the assignments? You know, the specific.
Because that's what's made this team so difficult. It's Jalen Brunson or Karl Anthony Towns for the most part. This team, my God, it's been Nesmith. It's been Tyrese Halliburton. It's been Pascal Siakam. And you don't know who it's going to be when. Yeah.
Scoring-wise. No, I mean, you can't – I mean, for the Knicks, what you have to point out is Mikal Bridges has had some games, and Josh Hart does some stuff. You know, like, Josh Hart might not be the guy that
goes – Oh, they all contribute. T.J. McConnell comes in. I mean, those guys – I mean,
sure, all of them, both sides.
They all have an ingredient.
Yeah. The Knicks starting five, the whole five's really good. Really good. But no, I think, the guy that you got to point out is, in terms of somebody who has to step up and do something that hasn't, is Benedict Mathurin. I don't know that Mathurin would start, but that's, you know, that in itself, when you're like, Ben Shepherd might start over Benedict Mathurin if Aaron Nesmith doesn't play. You know, that's kind of how shaky of a series Mathurin's had. And so, you know, Shepherd has been solid, steady, you know, provided some good, you know, good defense, you know, just harassing people. And, you know, Shepherd hadn't played a whole lot in, you know, previous series. And so, and Mathurin's been kind of the steady part of the rotation, and you just haven't seen a lot of good, a lot of great minutes out of him. It's not that he's been terrible, but it's just that you just haven't seen a lot of production. And, you know, just haven't seen him really just show up, on defense. I mean, not that when I say show up, I mean that I'm not saying he's not playing any. I'm saying, like, you haven't seen him flash necessarily. So if Mathurin does start, you know, then obviously you need Mathurin to give you, you know, a real Benedict Mathurin game, you know, where he gets some buckets. You know, you've seen some flashes of good defense from him in these playoffs. I thought he did a really good job of jamming up Kevin Porter Jr. in the first round. So you need some stuff like that from him, because he's going to have to guard somebody. I mean, you're probably going to shift Andrew Nembhard over to Brunson in the starting lineup. You might do that anyway, you know, if Nesmith isn't 100%. So just picking up that assignment, Nesmith has been defending Brunson to start this whole series, and he was really, really good on him in game three to start. It took a while for Brunson to get any buckets. So I think if you get, you know, like somebody's going to have to shift over to that assignment, and that's going to be big. But you're going to need buckets from that wing position still. You know, so you're going to need some scoring production. You know, the Mathurin's going to have to give you something, whether he gives it to you from the starting lineup or off the bench. You're going to have to get some real production there. I mean, I don't know what he was minus, but it wasn't good the other game. I mean, and, you know, I think I don't think he even played the second half of game two. So, you know, it's he has had a really, really quiet series. So you're going to need something like that from them. But obviously, again, everybody has to step up. Everybody's got to make shots. Everybody's got to defend. You know, everybody's got to move up one kind of notch as far as your defensive assignment is concerned. You're guarding somebody that's just a little bit better than you were guarding yesterday. And that, you know, that takes a lot out of you. Like I said, Nembhard probably moves on to Brunson. So it's like, okay, well, who takes Hart? Who takes Bridges? You know, like, do you put Siakam on Towns? You know, who takes Ananobi? You know, it's basically like, I mean, do you expect the Knicks to start the same five again? What happens when you shift and bring Hart in? You know, how do you move those assignments around? And everybody's got to pick up somebody a little bit better, because Nesmith has been guarding the best player. So we move it around. Dustin, should we play Pascal, Miles, Obi more against the Knicks' two big lineup? A little. I mean, I think, you know, that's helpful. I mean, I don't know. Rick's been likes what he got out of Tony Bradley. And I know that sounds weird. Bradley has barely registered. He's, you know, 14th guy, or I guess 13th guy on the roster, I suppose. Guy they picked up on a 10-day, and they've asked him to play a lot of minutes. It hasn't been bad. He's done a good job of keeping Robinson off the glass. I mean, Robinson's been good, but he hasn't been dominant. He hasn't been overwhelming, and Bradley's done a good job of boxing him out. And Bradley's, you know, basically, if you put a guy like Bradley in there and say, like, your job, your whole entire world revolves around boxing out Mitchell Robinson. Don't think about anything else. Don't worry about anything else. Just do that. You know, I think he's been pretty good at that. I mean, obviously, any of those other three guys, they're thinking different thoughts. You know, they're also considered thinking about, you know, like, they're trying to, you know, guard Carl Anthony Towns. You know, one of them is, they're trying to, you know, make sure Ananobi doesn't burn them, trying to switch, trying to move, all that kind of stuff on defense. All those guys have important offensive roles. So, I mean, like, it's not a bad idea. They threw that group out there a little bit. But, you know, there are things that takes away. You can run with them. Obviously, Pascal and Obi are particularly good floor runners for big guys. Really spectacular. Two of the best, you know, transition runners that you'll see in the league. So there's value to that. I mean, it can maybe kind of slow you up when you get in the half court a little bit, in terms of their ability to space and whatnot. Obviously, they can all shoot. But it moves a little different in terms of how they operate in a half court setting. But there's some value there. But, you know, Rick Carlisle is pretty sharp when it comes to rotations and stuff. As much as he gets criticized for it, they generally make sense in the long term. So, you know, so we'll see what direction he goes there.
Yeah, big game for the Pacers. One that they have to put in their pocket. You cannot go back. You can't win the first two games on the road and then give up two at home. So, especially with two more to play in New York after that. So we'll see how that turns out. It could have been a spectacular. It was still a great day for the city of Indianapolis, the state of Indiana, with the Indianapolis 500 sold out, 350,000 people. Then you add another 20,000 at the Pacers game, and I'm sure there was some crossover, but not very much. So, again, you have the largest sporting event in the world. Now you've got the largest two sporting events that ever happened in a single day, probably.
Yeah,
20,000 doesn't mean a lot.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a packed house. It was loud. It was everything. I mean, basically, I mean, you just had a lot of carryover. I mean, it was just an amazing atmosphere. And obviously, it changes when, you know, you blow a 20-point lead. You know, it got a little bit different in there. But no, I mean, it was just it's wild stuff that you can, you know, put this together. And certainly, I mean, I you would have to think it's difficult for people to get to both. I know Nathan Baird did a story on some of the people who did, you know, went out and found some folks that managed to go to both. I mean, I salute both the production of your wallet and your liver in that case. If you're able to put that together over the course of a day, I imagine you had to pace yourself. So, you know, that had to be not easy,
I'm sure you had plenty of time to consume alcohol after the race on your way to the pace.
You couldn't run that marathon. You can't run that marathon. There's a lot of people that if you really do the Indy 500 hard, you could not get into Gainbridge, I don't think, at the end of the day, or force yourself to stay up until 11 o'clock at night watching basketball. I think it's just still just fascinating stuff. I mean, even, you know, whoever did it had to have a really just cool event, a cool day to see both of those things, just kind of both of those spectacles on the same day. You know, and it was cool when Alex Paolo came out, you know, was honored on the floor, you know, basically around the third quarter. He wore a Halliburton jersey, I think, in the parade. And then came out and won, and then came out in a Halliburton jersey again. So that was, you know, I mean,
like, he's no dummy, no that's dummy.
Karma. That's karma right there, I think. Just well played on that end. And so he was.
And maybe that works out for the Pacers as well. Maybe that karma goes the other way.
Maybe it looked nice at the time. Nana Blues. But still, you know, I think. But yeah, no, it definitely. I thought, and just. It's cool whenever the Pacers get the opportunity to, you know, salute the rest of the city at something. And, you know, basically when they're still going for the 500, I mean, obviously in Indy 500 racers end up at Pacers games throughout the year because there's all any number of kind of stuff.
Well, Alex Pillow showed up for – I was surprised how briefly they brought him out. I mean, it was just a blink. Hey, he walks out wearing the reef and waves, and that's it. I'm like – wow, that's it. Man just won the Indianapolis 500. He's won six of the first seven stinking races this year.
You only got a timeout, man. I mean, like, you got everything else is booked. You got.
I couldn't believe it's like, damn, man. Hey, Alex. Hey, how are you doing? Thank you. We'll see you.
Yeah. Out just to kind of walk. I mean, I guess there wasn't a lot for him to do. You know, it's like you just did run a race. Like, you don't need the. You know, I mean, they had the guy earlier with this the dude that has the Chihuahua that does tricks and stuff.
He came back twice.
Yeah, he came back twice. I mean, but it's just, I mean, like, you can't. It's like, all right, well, like, Alex, you don't have a Chihuahua, so I mean, like, what are you?
No Chihuahua. All you got is a wreath, man. All you got is a wreath, man.
All you got to do is salute. I mean, like, unless you're gonna
and you smell it and you stink. You smell like rotten milk.
Exactly. You probably smell terrible. So, like, just, you know, like, say hi to everybody and move along. You know, we got this much of a timeout for you. You look cool.
Alex pulled smart. He drank the milk, but he did not dump it all over himself.
Yeah, I don't know why anybody does that.
No. I don't either, because that's the word. You're done. Your day is over, because yeah, once that dries, oh my God, you're not even going to be able to stand the smell of yourself.
No. And they, I mean, and for once, it wasn't one of those just cooker of a days where it's like 90 all day and you're just, it just gets gross, but. You know, but
did you get a chance to watch a race at all?
No, we had a wedding in South Bend on Saturday.
Who gets married on Memorial Day Sunday?
Saturday. It was Saturday.
Oh, okay.
We were up in South Bend on Saturday, and then we drove down to basically spent most of the 500 driving, because I had to get back, obviously, for tip. So we watched a little bit of it, you know, kind of the first 10 laps or so, 15 laps before we got on the road. So we caught a little bit, but didn't catch the end. It ended when we were about, I don't know, probably half an hour from Indy, something like that. So,
well, yeah. Hopefully the next time we get to speak with you, we'll be talking about the Pacers. Will the finals have started?
No.
Okay.
Monday. So game seven would be, if there is a game seven, it would be next Tuesday. So this is how
I can see that. I can see that happening.
It can happen. So it'll be Tuesday. So today's game four, Thursday's game five. Saturday it's every other day, because they're not taking any days off, you know, east, west. So it's, you know, Tuesday game four in the east, Wednesday game five in the west, Thursday game five in the east. So it'd be Friday game six in the west, if there is one, Saturday game six in the east. So that would make it next Tuesday, would be game seven. So if there are seven games, then that will be next Tuesday. If not, then, I mean, the finals are the dates of the finals are set. You can't move the finals up. Every other round you can move up. But the finals are set. So, set in stone before the playoffs even start, in terms of what days they are. So June 5th would be game one of the finals.
Who's carrying the finals, by the way?
ABC.
Damn. So we're done with Charles after.
We are. This is it. And we're not done with Charles. Remember, they're getting a gig next year. But as has been the case, the TNT guys have always been done after the conference finals.
They should never be done. They are the best. I mean, Ernie runs that crew like a ringmaster. It is great. It's the best. It is the best halftime.
Yeah,
it's the best halftime show or post show, either way, of any sport that I watch, any level, any anything. I love it.
Yeah, no, they're hilarious, and I mean that's the one thing that I don't want to say I miss. Well, I do miss it, because I mean I don't get to watch it right now, because they're
right.
They're right on after, and so yeah, like it's. You stop what you're doing when Inside the NBA comes on. If you're still up, you know, if you manage to make it through the, you know, the 10 o'clock game, you're like, okay, well, I'm pot committed. I got to see, you know, what Kenny and Chuck and, you know, Shaq are going to say. And, you know, I mean, it is worth noting, like, obviously, like, as far as like them being the top of the line basketball analysts, they're not, they're just, but they're hilarious.
They just,
you know, even if you're like, sometimes they say some stuff and you're like, Chuck, you have no idea what you're talking about there.
Oh,
like,
Shaq got up in the middle of it one day, started walking off. He had to go to the restroom.
It was amazing.
Like, where you go? They're like, where you going? You talk too much. I got to go to the bathroom. I mean, it was crazy.
That was, and they brought a Portageon out for the next game to make sure it was there.
Dustin DePere.
They're ruthless on each other, and it's hilarious. They're going to have a show again next year. I think it's going to be ESPN. I know NBC and ESPN are going to have the contracts going forward, so there will still be an inside the NBA. I think it'll be. Yeah, they'll be on one of those networks, so they will continue. It's going to be weird to see if it is ESPN, and I think it's ESPN. It's going to be weird to see how they work that in with everybody else, because obviously it's just two kind of different moods. When you watch kind of the ESPN's crowd and TNT's crowd, and TNT is just sort of based on that group, and ESPN just has so much talent, different kinds of talent. Do you work those guys in with Stephen A? I don't know about that. I don't think that jives. ESPN. I think Malik Andrews is terrific. I think Bob Myers has done some really good work. They have obviously a team of really good reporters. Brian Windhorst, Tim McMahon, Tim Bontemps. Those guys. That crowd is really, really good. And so it's like, okay, well, how do they mix in with them? What's that going to look like? And I can't remember how it sets up, but we'll see.
We certainly will. Dustin DePierrick with the Indy Star, giving you all the coverage of the Indiana Pacers. Make sure you're giving him a follow, keeping up with all that he does. Appreciate you, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jim.
You betcha. Hey, we've got more coming up. When we come back, we'll talk about Puerto Rico, Indiana men's basketball, heading south this fall. Welcome back to The Hard Truth, Distilling Company Studios on this Tuesday, post-Memorial Day Tuesday. Thanks a lot again to all of our servicemen and women who keep our country safe, who have fought and given the greatest sacrifice as we sit here and are able to do all that we do each and every day. Thank you. Salute. I salute. Tip of the cap. Indiana men's basketball heading to Puerto Rico. I wonder if Fernando Mendoza will go with them. Too bad the football team's not going. Details, that trip will take place in August as the Indiana men's basketball program takes their foreign trip with three exhibition games during the August 5th to 12th dates in San Juan, Puerto Rico. I wonder if the statute of limitations has expired for an Indiana head coach. That would be exciting to see. Wouldn't that be funny? They said, oh, no, and I'm not Bob Knight. We are excited for this opportunity to play three high-level games in Puerto Rico this summer, said Indiana men's basketball coach Darren DeVries, as the Hoosiers will take on a Puerto Rican all-star team and a pair of games against Mega Superbet, a professional team in Serbia. A Serbian team named Big Superbet. Ooh, that could be scary. Just kidding. The trip will allow us to bond both on and off the court as we prepare for the 25-26 season. I would like to thank the administration and the people at CSM for putting such a great event together. CSM is the group that put that trip together. I'm not familiar with who they are, but the week-long tour of the capital city of Puerto Rico, an unincorporated territory of the United States, will be put on by Complete Sports Management, CSM, an all-encompassing sports events and marketing agency whose core capabilities include the creation of sporting events globally, event management, sponsorship, hospitality packages, etc., etc. CSM is excited to partner with Puerto Rico in bringing Indiana men's basketball to their beautiful island, said Leah Miller-Tooley, president of CSM. As a basketball-loving culture, they are sure to embrace one of college basketball's premier programs and their passionate fans. This is a week-long trip, people. I wonder if the deal is for fans is going to be a week-long. That's a long time to ask someone to be gone, to ask somebody to go. Man, very interesting. But all of this information is up on the Hoosier.com as well, Hoosier.com and On3. Discover Puerto Rico is thrilled to welcome the Indiana men's basketball team to our island in partnership with CSM, said Carlos Diaz, Delis Sports Tourism Director. So it's got to be, that's got to be a pretty cool trip, though. If you've never, if you're someone like myself who's never been to Puerto Rico, you don't need a passport because it's part of the United States, an unincorporated part, as I mentioned before. So it'll be the first opportunity to see what this team is going to be like, what this team is going to look like. And the bonding part, you know, the players that I've had on that I've talked to, we've talked about that and that the importance of that. These guys don't know each other. So trips like this are important. It'll be interesting to see how quickly they can bond. But I think that when that's a known thing going into the season, that I think you work on it harder, faster. I think that you know time is fleeting. It's not like you, when you're a freshman arriving, you're like, I've got 4 years. You know, there's no rush to do anything. Well, that's not the case now for these guys. It's compact. You've got a season. You've got to get together now. You've got to win now. You're going to be an impact player now. All these players are expected to play now. So you've got to get together and bond now. We'll look forward to it, man. Anybody planning on going, wanting to go? That'll be cool. Man, what's wrong with my Spanglish? I got some good old Spanglish. What you talking about, Willis? Just kidding. Five lefts cracking on me. But who doesn't? I should be. But yeah, Indiana play a pair of games, like I said, against Mega Superbird. They're a professional club based out of Belgrade, Serbia. And I've already talked about all the players coming this way from Europe. These guys are pros, man. They may not be NBA players, but they're pros. They play all the time together. They have been playing together. They compete together. So it makes Russell asking, will Sisley be on the team in Puerto Rico? Well, why would he not be? He's on the team. Every team member will be in Puerto Rico. So, yeah, this is for the entire team. But everyone at Mega is extremely excited that after a one-year break, the club will once again have the opportunity to face off against one of the prestigious American college programs. Misko Maznatovic, legal counsel for Mega Superbet, said the matchup promises to be a real treat for all basketball fans as it brings together two elite talent developers on one side. Now, that name, Misko Maznatovic, that's the guy. He's the man. When it comes to foreign players coming to this country, he's the guy. He is the agent for Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets. And he has never dealt with college players. Well, as you heard me say last week, he expects to represent, I think it was between 35 and 50 college players this upcoming season. Boy. Wouldn't hate to be him. Not a bad payroll. Getting a cut off of 50 players. I don't know that that'll exceed his cut for Nikola Jokic's contract, but it ain't going to be bad. But this is the guy. This is the guy who, I don't want to say is controlling him, but he's sure bringing them in. Hey, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Greg Rakestraw from the ISC Sports Network will join us. He had a busy, busy time over the weekend as well. We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. We're living here, baby. You've got him. Greg Rakestraw, a little extra spot in there just for you. You missed it earlier, so I wanted to make sure we threw it in there another time as Greg Rakestraw joins us after a busy, busy week. Well, when is it not a busy week? But a busier weekend just because of the event, the Indianapolis 500. I heard you a few times on various things. You were all around. But, man, what a great time it is to be at the Speedway. And what a great weekend it was at the Speedway. I mean, the entire month, but a great weekend to wrap it up.
Crowds were crazy in the best way possible. Television numbers were up. Biggest television audience since 2008. Obviously, there was some controversy going in. There was some controversy coming out. And the standard for that race has become so high that by recent 500 standards, the race was good and not great. Obviously, we had about a 40-minute delay in terms of starting the race because of just the lightest of showers that came through right at the beginning of the race. But at the same time, Jim, I got home about 2.5 hours earlier than I did the year before since we didn't finish the race, you know, to like 7:45, 8 o'clock last year. So, It was a day and a week and a month that was filled with a lot more good than bad. And now the question is twofold. A, how well does the series do in carrying over the momentum from its largest event? How does that trickle over to Detroit and then Gateway and then Road America, which are the other three events that take place in the month of June? And B, can anybody catch Alex Palou? Because Alex has basically the equivalent of a 2-race lead in the series point standings just through 6 races. So Palou continues what just could be the best season in the history of the IndyCar circuit.
Were you at the event last night that they have? What is it? I forget what you call it.
The Victory Banquet. Winner.
Yeah, there you go. The Victory Banquet.
No, I don't get to get all dressed up in a tux. I get to sit back and watch that a little bit. I saw that Scott Dixon, his own teammate, offered to buy he and his family a fully paid 5-week vacation.
That's, so he wouldn't that's show up. That's what it jumped out at me that made me laugh. I have just bought you this 5-week vacation for all expenses paid for you and your family. Yeah, and Alex Bestwick quickly quoted, well, he might still be the leader when he comes back. Oh, man. Greg stalled a little bit. He'll come back here with us in a second. But,
When you hear Pato Award and you hear, Will Power, guys that were second or third in the last two races, talk about just what Palou is doing and how unnormal that is. Again, that's why it makes it such an interesting story as to his dominance, winning 5 of the first 6 races and finishing second at Long Beach, the one race he didn't win.
I was wondering about that. I hadn't looked it up. I was curious about the race that he did not. Who won that race?
Kyle Kirkwood was the winner of that race. So, Kyle had finished 6th in the Indy 500, but he was one of 3 cars that failed post-race tech. And so he ended up being bumped to the back of the field. But in that race, Alex was lurking in that race too. Again, it is, we're talking about like A.J. Foyt in 64 and Little Al in 94. No one in the last 25 years. And really, I would say this modern era of IndyCar, you can kind of – everybody, for the most part, the top stars have been back together since 2003. That's where you're kind of having an apples-to-apples comparison. The only guy that had had a series start like Palou has had was Dan Weldon 20 years ago, where he won 4 of the first 5 races. And that included the Indy 500. And he basically won the title by 80 points. Again, the most you can score in a given race other than Indianapolis is 54. Alex is 115-point lead after 6 races. 115 points. So they can start putting his name on that trophy now. What he is really trying to do is get to what AJ did in 64, get to what Al Unser Sr. did in 70 or 71, and that is when 10 races in a given season, including the 500, there are 11 races left to go, and Palou is sitting at 5 races won. So if he comes anywhere close to keeping the pace he has so far, he may go down as having the greatest IndyCar season in history.
The thing that amazed me about the Indianapolis 500 win, he was not a part of the lead for most of the race. He was not, you know, didn't have a dominant stretch in the race. He just moved up through the field, and the next thing you know, he's in the lead and he wins the race. And it was like, damn, Alex Palou did it again.
It's funny, the guy that I just happened to watch the 91 500 in the last couple of days. And the way that Alex won that race was very similar to Rick Mears when he won his fourth and final 500 in 91, in that didn't lead until he had to, didn't lead until the very end. Something similar happened in the Grand Prix race the weekend, you know, 2 weeks before. Alex didn't take the lead until lap 59. And once he led, he didn't give it up. And the same thing happened. Once he passed Marcus Ericsson with 14 laps left to go, he was the only leader of that race. His team puts him in contention every week, and he and his strategist, Barry Wanzer, know exactly where to be, right place, right time. Let's face it, okay, there is inevitably some luck, not for them to be where they are, but that somebody else doesn't make a mistake and collectively take them out. Luck happens in racing, more bad than seemingly good. That bad luck has avoided him so far this season as well. And Jim, he's about to win his fourth series championship in the last 5 years. Fourth in the last 5 years. That's like Jimmy Johnson top end NASCAR stuff. That's Michael right. Schumacher F1 stuff that Palou is doing right now.
And it's amazing because it's not like you don't have great teams out here, great drivers out here, successful drivers, successful teams. It's crazy because of the dominance without being dominant. I know that doesn't sound right, but it's like he's dominant without being dominant, but he's always there at the end. And the luck part is crazy. Because I don't know that there's another sport where you have to have more luck. You cannot have a single thing go wrong. You cannot have a bad pit stop. You cannot have a fire in the pit. You cannot have missed gas or missed fuel go into the tank. Your entire management. Everything has to go right every time.
And that is where having such a great team pays off. You know, that's why we have said about Alex, it is the perfect combination of driver, of team owner in Chip Ganassi. You know, for Chip, depending on how you count it, this was his sixth or seventh Indianapolis 500 win. He was a partial owner of the 89 winner in Emerson Fittipaldi. His cars have won now six times under the Chip Ganassi Racing banner. But where Chip has even more of a dominance than that would be in terms of IndyCar Series wins. Scott Dixon is a six-time series champion. Alex is going to be a four-time series champion. And so over the last 20 years, half of the series championships belong to one team, and that's Chip Ganassi Racing. And that is something that is truly jaw-dropping in an era where the depth in the sport, the competition, the parity has never been what it has been, just because it's frankly legislated that way. You know, there's not a team that can go out and get this technological advantage.
Nope, it makes it all the more crazy. Just,
yeah, absolutely.
What is up next for you, my friend?
So what's up next for me is I get a little bit of downtime this week, and then it is Indiana All-Star Week for me. So we will have the Junior game at Charlestown on Sunday, the Futures game at Fishers on Monday, Junior-Senior game at Greenfield Central on Wednesday, and then the finale at Gainbridge next Saturday. So that's what's going to keep me hopping next week.
Man, lots coming. It doesn't stop. Greg Rakestraw, make sure you're keeping up with him and everything going on at the ISC Sports Network as well. Appreciate you as always, my friend.
Talk to you next Monday.
You betcha. Greg Rakestraw joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. And man, what a great day it has been. Fun to return from the holiday. I hope you enjoyed your holiday weekend and are ready for the short week. It's like the gift that keeps on giving. You only have 4 days if you have to go to work, and if you don't, you only have 4 days to wait till the weekend. So plenty more coming. As you heard from Greg, the All-Stars coming up soon with the Indiana All-Stars, boys and girls, versus Kentucky. As those games will square off, you'll have the early risers, the future stars. Then you have the junior All-Stars. And then the big boys and girls will go at it. But we'll have all of that next week. But we'll talk about it going in this week as we move on forward. But great to have you along for the ride today. Appreciate you joining us no matter where and how. We'll be back tomorrow to do it all again. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.